It's 8:31, and we'd like to invite you now to join us for a very special program in commemoration of the 54th anniversary of the Cuddly Giant.
Get close to the Cuddly Giant.
Today, WHAS Radio is proud to celebrate 54 years of continuing Kentuckiana service. And at this time, we'd like to share with you some of those memories of radio's earlier years. We call this piece, The Birth of a Cuddly Giant. And here's your host, Jim Walton.
Thomas Edison had begun it all by discovering the vacuum tube. Marconi, since 1895, had been dabbling with wireless transmission, and rumors began. In 1917, Henry Deal, an obscure Louisville City Hall draftsman, told Pleasant Brooks that the day would come when the world could hear his baritone. Mrs. Brooks says he described not only radio transmission, but forecast television. And then in 1920, Pittsburgh listeners picked up first radio station broadcasts from KDKA. By the following year, crystal detectors had become a national rage, and at the time our story opens in 1922, the country was mumbling of dynamos, voltmeters, variometers, choke coils, and variable resistance. Radio sets were being incorporated into rings, necklaces, and cigar boxes. July 1922. On the 2nd of July, Fifth Avenue buses in New York were equipped with overhead antennae for convenience of passengers who couldn't wait to get home to listen. The Lackawanna Railroad was preparing to install earphones in the berths. It was estimated that there were already 19,000 stations in this country, 15,000 of them amateur, 348 experimental, 2,783 on ships, 439 commercial. The National Geographic magazine figured that distances from now on would be measured not in miles, but in knob turns. Colleges were preparing to introduce courses. $5 million a week was being spent on radio equipment, which in 3 years had increased several thousand percent. Recruiting was being stimulated by it. Populace ducked in and between swims up the beach to listen to the ether, and inventors were claiming contact with the spirit world. Headphones clamped to ears of patients were being used to prevent discomfort during operations. In Texas, a wedding ceremony was performed by the minister, bride, and bridegroom at three different stations. By 1922, KDKA was broadcasting regularly from a tent on top of a Pittsburgh building, sending out regular concerts, news, church services, and static. Detroit, WWJW, tossed an antenna out of a fifth-story window, tied it to a rock in the alley, and fretted because its signals came out queer. They were still in a tizzy when Judge Bingham got the idea of a radio station for Louisville. April 22nd, Judge Bingham, owner of the Courier-Journal, called on Credo Harris. Credo, he said, I want you to put a radio station on the air for me, or words to that effect. Well, Credo and Emmett Graft visited WWJW, found them biting their nails, but learned how to set up a station. A license awarded by Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce. And why WHAS? Nobody knows. But Judge Bingham knew what he wanted of his radio station. When WHAS received its license, the judge said, I want a radio station which will reach into the farthest confines of the state, where a man may string an aerial from his cabin to the nearest pine tree and, sitting before the fire in his chair, have a pew in a church, a seat at the opera, a desk at the university. Basically, the judge wanted the operation of WHAS to reflect a concern for the interest of the listeners and for the region which WHAS reached. The new station was built in space acquired from the Fireproof Storage Company. It consists of the five rooms, a reception room, studio, manager's office, engineer, and generator. The walls were pale cream, the woodwork apple green, pale gray rugs, drapes at casement windows, wicker furniture upholstered in bright cretonne. A grand piano at one end, an organ at the other, and a microphone in size and shape of an alarm clock. Guests were scared to death to touch metal in the studio. Nobody knew at that time what would happen. Credo Harris, meanwhile, was busy sending out letters to university upon university, musical societies, public characters, prominent individuals of Kentucky and southern Indiana, and many queued up for auditions. One couple in their 70s appeared to sing. Saturday, July 15th, 1922. Two antennae, 60-foot towers, were raised on the roof of the Courier-Journal building and practice tests made, phonograph and piano concert. 100 calls reported that it was loudest, clearest program they'd ever heard. William Tapp of Upper River Road, using a 25-foot clothesline for antenna, said the program was loud and distinct. Sunday, July 16th. Marconi, in an interview quoted in the Courier-Journal, foresaw a great university of the air. A warning voice, he predicted, would clear the ether of all chatter, making way for the great ones of humanity, science, authors, artists, who would lecture for some great central institution to classes of 20 million people. Monday, July 17th. Sizzling weather, unnoticed by fans raiding electric shops for last-minute equipment. One woman, electrically uninformed, constructed a set from directions printed in the newspaper. She said she heard the second practice concert just fine. Tuesday, July 18, 7:20 p.m. 10 minutes to airtime. Emmett Graff got the last bug out of the equipment. Down on the streets, the fans were clustering in mobs in front of loudspeakers poking out of electric shops. 150 people in the crowd in front of Tappel Electric Company. 500 in a theater in Eminence, Kentucky. One man said, "I'm 70, but I never believed I'd live to hear such things come from the air." July 18, 1922, 7:30 p.m. The red light went on and Credo Harris announced, "This is WHAS, the radio telephone broadcasting station of the Courier-Journal and the Louisville Times in Louisville, Kentucky." Reaction to the first broadcast were generally enthusiastic, but not always. Subsequent natural disasters were blamed on radio waves. And one critic complained that her child throwed up in school, blamed disturbance of the ether. Another said bricks fell out of his chimney. One woman sat up for 40 hours, couldn't stand the electricity in her bed springs and queer noises in the fireplace. One woman visited the studio hoping to make contact with her late husband. One farmer came in, accused Credo of commuting with the devil, said a blackbird had dropped out of a flock passing overhead, dead, said it might have been me. September 14, WHAS first to make a special test broadcasting to a moving train. Louisville and Nashville Railroad picked up the program in a tunnel under Muldraw Hill. In the fall of 1922, Credo, busier than a one-armed paper hanger, visiting schools throughout Kentucky, urging them to get together money for radios, visioning huge educational opportunity and widespread broadcasting to the classrooms. July 18th. The first weather report broadcast at the end of the opening program. And these weather reports later were to save farmers millions of dollars. We pay radio costs many times over. Due to unfathomable federal ruling, stations broadcast at 360 on the dial. But weather had to be given at 485. Now, this caused frantic adjustments of sets. Usually, by the time the farmer got the new channel, the station was back on 360. This rule was changed due to urgent pleading by the Louisville Weather Bureau. Religion, July 19. On his way to the studio, Credo Harris saw a church bulletin board with a legend, "God is always broadcasting." It gave him the idea for establishing regular church services, already begun by some other stations. For 1922. July 19th, 4 p.m., the first baseball scores broadcast. October 4th, WHAS, first baseball game broadcast, the World Series, compiled from INS reports by wire. October 21st, the first football game, Center versus Harvard. music in 1922. Music was the backbone of the station from the start. During the first 3 months, the station gave 82 afternoon concerts, 82 evening concerts, 12 Sunday afternoon sacred recitals, 1,610 entertainers, many repeat performances by the same solos, of course. The actual count of repeats was not kept at that time. July 22nd, 1922, Saturday night. Following the regular program, Charles Meyer's dance orchestra moved into the station from the country club, while a mobile unit rigged up to advertise WHAS pinch hit for the dancers at the club, reproducing music from the studio. Up till then, it had been thought that drums, bass files, could not be reproduced by radio. WHAS was first to introduce clavichord to the air. Helen Mitchell, in costume, played it with a mic inside the instrument. Other programs carried music from jugs, carpenter's saws, zithers, and French harps. Whistlers enjoyed a streak of popularity. December 1922. The first remote pickup was of the Alamo Theater organ. October 31st, 1922, in the news. Vice President Calvin Coolidge spoke. He was supposed to take 15 minutes. He spoke 6. Thomas R. Marshall and Ida M. Tarbell also addressed the WHAS audiences. Ida M. Tarbell described it as the greatest scare I ever had in my life. In 1922, WHAS started cooperating with police in the location of criminals. They also established a Bureau of Missing Persons. WHAS 1923. By January 1st, WHAS had reached Spanish Honduras, Sydney, Nova Scotia, and Hudson's Bay. 30,000 letters had been received from its fans, and WHAS ranked as one of the 6 foremost stations in the United States. It had given 3,006 performances, had reunited 17 missing persons to their families, one of them 2 minutes after the first announcement on the air. One few battery sets still were in general use. Engineers were still fretting over body capacity. Fans who called up to say their apparatus had gone bad were told to wiggle their cat's whiskers, dash crystal with rubbing alcohol, or bake in the oven for 10 minutes. The first anniversary, July 18, 1923. The station had received 64,000 letters, estimated listeners at 3,200,000, and had been heard in Labrador and the Azores. The anniversary was marked by receipt of a letter claiming that there was a blind spot 90 miles from Louisville. Station manager Credo Harris sent an engineer to investigate and verify the report. No WHAS. July 21st, Credo Harris instructed technicians to attempt to pick up a radio signal from underground in Mammoth Cave. The engineers took a guide with him, tried 3 times. The first spot was too wet, the second too dry. And at the last moment, they got results on the 3rd try. This was the first broadcast which proved radio waves traveled through the earth. WHAS 1924, March 20th. WHAS instituted the first out-of-town pickup. Credo Harris at the Brown Hotel talking a long distance with Mary Pickford in New York. Also in March, WHAS started a radio farm school, which was welcomed by the farmers, by teachers, colleges, and agents. August 22nd, 1924, B-O-W. That's before Orson Welles. WHAS first to broadcast a battle scene, anticipated Quentin Reynolds on the Spanish front a few years later. Fort Knox sham battle bred a rumor of Martians landing. WHAS participated in the first chain broadcast when it hooked up John W. Davis speaking as Democratic presidential candidate from Carnegie Hall, New York. 1924 was the first year election returns were broadcast, and on November 24th, WHAS was heard in London, England. Agriculture. April found a series of talks on crops, livestock, cooperative marketing, home economy based on USDA experiments. Music. It was during this year that the station began setting up remote studios in various music stores in town, six or seven. Volunteer musicians on scheduled broadcasts sometimes failed to show up by airtime. At this point, Credo Harris would pick up the phone and one or another music studio went into action. Isabel Weitzelberger, who was one of the mainstays of the studio in 1924, was working at one of the stores and remembers rushing downstairs to round up any loose musicians who happened to be browsing there and bringing them upstairs for emergency performance. The result was sometimes unconventional. One concert consisted of four banjos and a string bass. These were music stores, of course. Other experiments were premeditated. There were piano quintets, jazz with pipe organ accompaniment. Such orchestras sometimes numbered as many as 100 pieces. Sports. This was the year of the first play-by-play report of the World Series. A telegraph operator was set up outside the studio door. WHAS 1925. All electric sets were beginning to replace batteries, crystal sets, and phones. September 4th, WHAS staged the first two-way conversation with a plane in flight. October 20th, the first commercial. A Chicago advertiser offered three free cigars for response to his spot announcement. The second week he wired, "For God's sake, quit. We're swamped." Sports. At the suggestion of Emmett Graff, WHAS staged radio games at Parkway Field, winning national attention. The players, prompted by radio from wire reports, reenacted current World Series games for Louisville fans. It was accurate enough that photographs of real and imitation games could be interchangeable. May 30th, the first derby reported from Churchill Downs. Guido Harris announced Emmett Graff engineered. Two listeners dropped dead from excitement in Louisville, one in Illinois. News in 1925. Big local news of the year, Floyd Collins' capture by Sam Cave. Reports of the WHAS held millions of listeners tense. In April, news bulletins from WHAS were responsible for the capture of robbers of a bank at 26th and Portland. Other criminals were caught and automobiles returned. WHAS 1926. This was the year the Federal Radio Commission was established to coordinate the urgent activities of the air. WHAS and five other stations formed the Midwest Continental Broadcasting Association. Arrangements were made to have WHAS join NBC the following year. WHAS had to start issuing passes since crowds of visitors had increased to such a great number. On February 19th, WHAS produced the first play written exclusively for radio. In November, the 18th, Queen Marie visited Louisville and spoke over WHAS. And in December, as a radio manufacturer turned out his millionth set, 700 stations were reported fighting for control of the air. Sports. WHAS carried news of the Dempsey-Tunney fight in which the challenger, odds 4-1 against him, rocked the champion before 132,000 spectators in Philadelphia. And we had the blow-by-blow account. WHAS 1927 joined NBC, and in June, Lindbergh addressed the WHAS audience. 3 weeks earlier, the Lone Eagle had soloed the Atlantic to Paris. Music. On March 27th, WHAS broadcast a concert by 100 harps from the Brown Theater. WHAS 1928. Both of the national political conventions were broadcast. On November 11th, WHAS was granted 5,000 watts of power. Sports, May 19th. WHAS fed its derby broadcast to 12 other stations. Credo Harris announced, "Raycount won on a rainy field." May 20th, Shipwreck Kelly awed a mob by sitting 100 hours on top of the WHAS antenna, climbing down to box two rounds at the end. WHAS 1929. Facilities of the University of Kentucky became available to the region through the agency of WHAS. To Judge Bingham, who was present in person to celebrate the event, it put flesh on his original vision of radio. WHAS engineers installed the UFK studio, and they were generous with their know-how. From this time on, WHAS carried daily broadcasts on agriculture and homemaking, with weekly discussions and talks, roundtables, and so forth on broad cultural lines of local, state, national, and international interest. June 1st, Lee Colson joined the staff as assistant to commercial manager. October 1st, a 6.5-hour show celebrating the American Legion conventioning in Louisville. Credo Harris was at the mic for the entire 6.5 hours. During the program, Credo on the courthouse steps announced that WHAS would increase to 10,000 watts. Religion, an afternoon program of devotions was begun in which ministers alternated under auspices of the Louisville Council of Churches. Agriculture, April 2nd. The U of K College of Agriculture programs became available to farmers, housewives, with the opening of studios at the U of K. Monday through Friday at 12:45, plus a weekly evening program. WHAS 1930. Petitioning for still greater increase in power, at a hearing in Washington, Credo Harris said, WHAS is ever alert to be of service in time of danger, distress, or trouble, an actual necessity for the area it serves. Many mountain people live behind a barrier of crags, bridgeless streams, and bridle traces, which render them inaccessible to practically every outside influence but the radio waves. January 20, Barry Bingham took a job in WHAS. He stayed 9 months or so learning all the angles. May 14, Skeets Miller perched on the roof talked to and from a ship in flight. Now, this deed, marking the first two-way broadcast with an Army bomber, was significant for military aviation. News, February 20th. WHAS reported the return of Richard E. Byrd from his year in Antarctica. WHAS 1931. The Federal Radio Commission extended the station licenses to 6 months. Hitherto, radio investment had been even a greater venture, with licenses limited to 3 months as a maximum. Amos and Andy were national heroes. Kate Smith was singing When the Moon Comes Over the Mountain. WHAS 1932, May 15th, joined the Columbia Broadcasting System. May 27th, WHAS made its first network contribution, the Louisville Loons. October 4th, granted 50,000 watts. For the present, to operate on half of that. December 1st, teletype replaces Morse in the newsroom. Religion. Asbury College, using remote studio set up by WHAS, begins a daily quarter-hour and Saturday and Sunday half-hour non-denominational programs of hymn, scripture, prayer, and brief sermons. WHAS 1933. Judge Bingham was appointed ambassador to the Court of St. James. February 6th, WHAS dedicated its new organ, one of the three largest in the United States, also the new Studio B. November 13th, permanent lines were established from the U of K studio. June 1st, the first listening center was established. It was suggested by Elmer Sulzer when a survey showed that the reason U of K programs were not being heard in eastern counties was that there was almost no radio sets. One county numbered 20, another 8. WHAS supplied technical advice and furnished radios. The U of K attended to the remainder and supervised the upkeep. 11 studios were opened the first year in isolated spots. Neighbors gathered in crossroads stores and private cabins and schoolhouses. For many, it was their first and only means of contact with a land beyond their tree-rimmed horizon. The number of listening gradually increased to 84. December 3rd, quietly on a Sunday morning, WHAS announced its advance to 50,000 watts. It was now audible from the leper colony of Molokai in the Pacific to Bangor, Maine. WHAS 1937, the year of the flood. January started bleak, cold. Rain, snow, fog, chill rotated monotonously. Blankets of dirty snow was washed into the gutters by days of straight gray rain. The result, swollen sewers, a congested river taxed already. Flood. WHAS became the nerve center of the stricken valley, staying on the air for 188 continuous hours. The announcers ate and slept at the studio. Special events crews dispatched to inundated areas. 115,000 appeals for help were put out on the air. The stirring technical story, often repeated as the station warned of failure of electric plant, achieved perilous hookup by telephone lines with WSM, which canceled commercials to carry on until WHAS's power was restored. Reports and appeals were carried over national and Canadian networks. As a result of the flood work, Lee Colson and Joe Eaton were elected to the National Headliners Club, and WHAS was awarded on April 24th the CBS Medal for Distinguished Service in recognition of work in saving and preserving human life during the disastrous floods of January 1937. Pete Monroe died of pneumonia. WHAS 1941, in March, the FCC changed the wavelength to 840. May 1st, the station added the programs of Renfro Valley to its schedule, a wealth of indigenous folk music and enormous popular appeal backed by John Lehrer's huge library of ancient ballads and modern mountain music, and by Renfro Valley personalities. December 7th, a fair, mild Sunday. The streets were sunny, bright and bare, the way they are on a December day. There had been a record rush all week in Christmas shopping. Store windows were full of dolls that sold fast. The supply was scant. The afternoon before, Texas U had plowed through Oregon 71-7. At the National Theater, the Gay 90s was playing. Out at the transmitter, the usual Sunday afternoon routine unrolled. The U of L music program was a minute and 30 seconds short at 12:43:30, but filled in the time on the science program which followed. In town, Dick Wade was on duty in master control. D.C. Summerford, assistant chief engineer, was puttering in the shop. Jimmy Borders was running the ET out of C control. Joe Weeks, the standby announcer, had the door closed and was reading the funny paper. Most of the listeners had just finished Sunday dinner. At 1:48:30, the old-fashioned revival hour was broken into with 45 seconds of unscheduled news. In a voice which he tried to make matter-of-fact, Weeks said, "Pearl Harbor has been bombed." People sat stunned. It took a second or third announcement to make it real. All night long, the station was alert. Bits of news poured in, mingled with orchestra music to which nobody danced. As the small hours grew larger, the music droned on, fading frequently for further interruptions. Yes, these were the early days of radio, the actual birth of WHAS.
You've been listening to The Birth of a Cuddly Giant, the beginning of WHAS radio, as we celebrate today 54 years of continuous Kentuckiana service. Thanks for joining us then and now.
This is WHAS, the radio telephone broadcasting station in Louisville, Kentucky.
The three U.S. flyers released by North Vietnam have just come off the big Boeing jumbo jet.
Le gouvernement est venu tenir pour l'histoire.
Early today, Hanoi unleashed a shock felt around the world. It was this, a peace agreement.
Peace with honor and not peace with surrender in Vietnam.
Bombs fell on the presidential palace and some miles away on the residence of the elected leader of Chile.
People in the rural area should take cover.
There is no real tight, definitive tornado as such. It's still turning in a large... Yes, there's one now. Starting, yes, dipping down from the bottom of the cloud.
But for the average commuter, the news was bad. There will be insufficient gas for some to drive to and from work.
People have got to know whether or not their president is a crook.
The meeting will come to order. Resolve that the committee...
Jury in New York has found former Attorney General John Mitchell and former Commerce Secretary Maurice Stans not guilty.
John Ehrlichman has just been found guilty.
John D. Connolly has been indicted.
John Dean has just been sentenced
to exercise its constitutional power to impeach Richard M. Nixon, President of the United States of America.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Your desire to know comes first. From Kentuckiana's news leader, WHAS.
The Cuddly Giant today is celebrating its 54th anniversary. We've invited everyone to share it with us as we look back now through the WHAS audio scrapbook. May 6, 1937, the Hindenburg Air Disaster, Lakehurst, New Jersey. Herbert Morris of WLS, Chicago.
The ship is riding majestically toward us like some great feather. These giant flagships standing here, the American Airlines flagships, waiting to rise into all points in the United States when they get the ship moored. It's practically standing still now. They've dropped ropes out of the nose of the ship. The rain had crashed up a little bit. The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It's burst into flames.
Get it started. Get it started. It's crashing. It's crashing terrible. Oh, my. Get out of the way, please. It's running, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring pads and all the folks between us. This is terrible. This is the worst of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's a flame. Running. Oh, 400 or 500 feet into the sky. It's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. It's smoke and it's flames now. And the frame is crashing to the ground. Not quite to the mooring mast.
Continuing news on the hour or any time.